Welcome back to the Tipsy Theology Podcast. And today's a special kind of episode. It's like a book club episode day today, but it's a club that you didn't know you were a part of. It's funny. I think what's funny about it is because since we spend a lot of time focused on the Bible, it kind of is like, I feel like any like church is like a big giant book club in a way. And today, you know, slightly different because we're going to be talking, I think, about biblical things. Not I think, I know we will be. But I just read this book, and I want to talk about it through that perspective. And there's some things in there that I think are really cool, and I think we could gain from. So without further ado, let's get this going. Are you thoroughly on pins and needles? The book I just read is Sir Gawain, depending on your persuasion, and the Green Knight. Interestingly, this is actually translated by J.R.R. Tolkien. There goes my bookmark. And it's kind of cool. So he didn't write it. It was written by an old medieval author. But he was the one who translated this, at least this version of it. And it's pretty cool. Pretty good. I think he did a great job, as far as I can tell. I don't know. I can't read the original. But it's a pretty cool story. For those that don't know, I'm gonna give you like the Paul summary of it. And then there's one line in particular that I'd like to use it like a bouncing off point for us today. But before we do that, you know, the last one I said, I wasn't drinking anything because I was sad. And even though I have been drinking a lot more infrequently, today is a special day. It's a Tipsy Theology Day. So to pair well with our medieval book, I thought, what better than the drink of the High Kings of Ireland, the Bunratty Mead. Bunratty. I shouldn't do that. I just think it wasn't any good. It wasn't a good accent. So actually, I picked this up from Bunratty Castle when I was in Ireland. And there was three, and now there's one. I saved it for a special occasion, and I think today might be that occasion. And I sure hope it is, because I'm about to open it up. I don't know if you guys have ever had mead before. It's hold on, let me crack this open. Here, listen to it. Take those little pops. It's not like a big bottle. It's like I brought it from Ireland. So it's those little like 50 mil little nips. It still smells good. It smells like it did when I got it there. I don't know if you guys are familiar with mead. For those that are not, like what I did there, it's actually based in honey. So it's made from honey. Here, let me read. Bunratty Mead is the enchanting marriage of pure honey and white wine, which has been crafted in small batches at Bunratty Winery in County Clare, Ireland. Enjoy chilled or neat. We're doing chilled. Pairs perfectly with any cuisine. That's quite a feat right there. Any cuisine, they're like, it's you just have it. Just drink it. So it's cool. I like the art on it. If you can see, it's got the castle there. It's very green, very, very Irish of them. And it's tasty. It's got like mead has that very kind of smooth sweetness to it. It's like it kind of feels like honey because it's got that like stickiness to it, which is interesting. And I'm also drinking out of a very special glass today. This is the official Whiskey Wednesday glass. I just found this in my storage stuff not too long ago. From moving around, you know, things get lost in boxes and whatnot, and it's like, oh, I was going through one, I was like, oh, this is it. So I was able to find it, which is, let me hold it this way so you can read it consistently. So I found this, and I was like, I have to drink out of this, even though it's not a Whiskey Wednesday episode, but it's still an episode. So cheers. Let's try some mead together. Ah, it's so good. It's so good. It kind of tastes like dessert because it's so sweet. So this is, it's like the texture of it or the consistency of it is like if you watered down honey. You know, honey has like that, like, it's a weird texture on your tongue where it's like, it's firm, but it's also kind of like smooth. Where this is like, it has a like firm stickiness to it, but it's also kind of runny. But you can kind of feel it like trying to hold together. Yeah, so like the instantly you're hit with that sweetness of the honey, but then it does have that body of the white wine that it talks about, which kind of comes in and helps fill out that middle like I can't talk today. That middle and bottom side of the flavor profile, and it's just nice and smooth. It's so smooth. I think one of my memories I had when I was in Ireland, we actually stayed the night at a castle one night, which was really cool. And it was late. It was like, I think it was after midnight at this point, or close to midnight. And I just thought it would be so cool to just like walk the castle in the courtyard inside as far as I could, you know, around the gardens that they have there in the middle of the night, drinking this mead. And I did. And it was actually kind of a really interesting experience. It was one of those where it's like in my head, this is going to sound so nerdy. In my head, I was like, all right, this must have been what it was like to be like a knight just like walking around the castle. And I was like, kind of cool. Now, if that's true, that's a whole other thing. But in my head, it's true, and that's what I experienced. And I'm going to stick to that to the day I die or until I know better. So, but for now, I don't know better. Yeah, so what are we talking about today? Thanks for asking. Thanks for asking. I don't know how you guys are, but I've been kind of enjoying these. It's like a, how do I want to say it? It's one where I come in here with these episodes, this last one and this one, with actually the last few, were thoughts that I want to say, but I don't have it like written out and formulated in such a way. And I think there's a lot of merit to doing it that way, and maybe you guys prefer that. You can let me know if that's what you prefer. But I really enjoy the conversational nature of like, let's explore an idea, let's explore a thought. That's one of the things I try to do when I have a guest on here. And I was like, let me take that same approach to myself when I'm here by myself. Because I think that's kind of some of the magic of this podcast is, yeah, let's just spend time exploring an idea and see where it takes us, and then we can balance that against what is true. So hopefully you're enjoying that. I sure hope so, because that's what's happening here. So let me give you my summary of this piece of work here. This piece of work. So it starts off, we have a scene, I believe it's Christmas time. So the book, the scenery is around Christmas and New Year's. So this very celebratory time, kind of poetic too, of what it's celebrating. This idea of Christ's birth and then into newness. It's kind of a very cool, foreshadowing in a lot of ways to set the scene. And so here we are in King Arthur's court, at a banquet hall, and they're enjoying the festivities and the times of the holidays and the seasons. And in comes this mountain of a man, all in green with a giant red beard. And he is the Green Knight. And he comes in, and he's welcomed by Arthur and everyone else there. And he says, like, hey, cool, but I'm actually here for a challenge. I want a challenge. And I heard you guys are the best, and so who wants to do it? Who's up for it? And this dude is massive. And so everyone is just sitting there silently. And he's like, are you kidding? You guys are all cowards? He's like, you're not going to take up this challenge? So he starts to mock them. And Arthur is like, this won't do. So he has the intention of challenging himself. And so Sir Gawain, he's like, you know what? I'm going to do it because I don't want our king over here to get hurt, basically. And he's like, I'm going to step up. So he decides to do that. And the challenge that the Green Knight wants is that they both get one clean hit at each other. So it's like they're putting each other in the other person's hands of how will you deal with me? And so the Green Knight gives Sir Gawain the first strike. And so what he does is he uncovers part of his neck and he goes, all right, hack away. And so that's what he does. He gets one solid hit on the guy. He's still alive. But then he says, okay, cool. He's like, I'll see you in a year. Because that's when you get to come to me and I get one strike upon you. That's when that's the deal. And so a year goes by. And mind you, he doesn't actually know where the knight lives. He just kind of has an idea. He doesn't know what his real name is, none of this stuff. He's just like, I kind of know where, like, he knows the direction of what to look for. And so a year goes by, and he's like, all right, it's time to go find this guy and finish up our deal. Because there's that idea of honor of the highest and courage. So for him to flake out on that would be showing cowardice. And he's like, well, that's not what a knight does, especially a Camelot knight. So that won't do. And as he's searching for the Green Chapel where the Green Knight would be, he finds this this town there, and he's welcomed by them, and they're like, oh yeah, we know where you're going. But stay with us for a little while, rest up, let's just enjoy the time. And during that, he notices, Sir Gawain notices that this guy's, the king's wife there, is actually quite a lovely lady. And so, you know, there's that temptation that he starts to get with that. And she seems to take a liking to him as well. And she starts to put him in positions that cause him to have to make very difficult decisions. And with that, it's like he, for the most part, it's like he remains pretty good. But he pushes the envelope a little bit here and there. And in the end, when he's leaving, cause he's like, okay, I gotta go. He ends up asking her for her girdle. And so he takes that from her. Well, she gives it to him, so he receives that, and then he wears that as a token. So then he goes off and he finds the Green Chapel, and he finds the Green Knight, and everyone's like, dude, you're dead. Like, this guy is huge. He doesn't deal well with people. Like, you're a goner. Well, he finds him, and he's like, okay, come on up. It's my turn. And he's got this just massive weapon, and it's like, yeah, Sir Gawain's dead. This guy is crazy. Well, the Green Knight goes to swing, and Sir Gawain freaks out. He flinches and dodges the swing. And instantly he regrets what happened, and instantly he's reprimanded for it. And what ends up coming out is the Green Knight says, okay, not only are you a coward for going against your word and you didn't take the clean strike, but also that that lady that you saw over there that you're wearing her girdle, that's actually my wife. And I sent her there to test you. And now I see that you are lustful and you're a coward. And this puts Sir Gawain in a very awkward position. But what he does, and I think this is an honorable thing that he does, and it's the right thing that he does. He's like, you know what? You're right. I messed up in these areas. You know, I made mistakes, and I was not acting knightly. But I need to correct those things. And so take another swing, and I promise I won't flinch from this one, and I will take it standing firm. And so he does. But what happens is the Green Knight, instead of just chopping his head right off, which he's more than capable of doing, he just cuts a portion of him so that way it leaves a massive mark. It cuts him in his neck and ends up leaving a giant scar, what would scar over, as a way of leaving him with the memory of this is what you've done and this is the marker that those are to remind you of those the things that you have done. So he goes back to Camelot finally, and he's covered up part of his neck, but eventually he's like, you know what, I need to tell everyone what happened. So he uncovers his neck where his now blemish is, as he calls it, and tells everyone what happened and how he is very shameful of what has transpired. And it's interesting. So he has a line here. And it says, "For a man may cover his blemish, but unbind it he cannot. For where once 'tis applied, thence part will it never." And so what's interesting is, like, he's in a place right now in this where he's living in that shame and that reminder, constant reminder of, like, yeah, this is that marker that reminds me constantly that I acted in these ways over here. And I can't change the fact that I did that. This mark up here will never go away for as long as I'm alive. And it'll always remind me, it'll always remind others that know the story of why I have that and who I am as that person. Like, he's made that a part of just who he is in general. And you know what's interesting is I think that's where a lot of us can tend to be and can tend to sit in this idea of I've done bad things or I've made mistakes, and that's who I am. We can live in that negative side of, like, that's it. And while on one hand it's like, well, yeah, that's a part of who you are now. Not who you are, but that's a part of your story now. Let me say it that way. I think for us to limit that, but let me sit on this other side first before we jump into that. The redemptive side of this is, it's like when we make decisions, when we do things, that alters us going forward. In that now, every time when we have an experience, when we do something, when we say something, when we see something, it's all filtered through all of the experiences that we've had up until that point. And for us to, how do I want to say it? Yeah, for us to say, like, oh, that's not a part of me, or that is a part of me, it's like, well, it is a part of you. And that it's like, yeah, everything you experience, everything you do, everything you see, you say, is filtered through all of those experiences, including that one. I've been thinking about this a lot recently for myself, in that there are things that, and how I respond to certain situations, that are shaped by things that have happened in the past, but sometimes I don't even realize those things, and it takes time for me, I think for all of us, to, like, uncover, okay, why am I responding this way in this situation? And when we find those things, we can realize, that's why. Like, this back here is the marker of why I experience and respond to things now in this way. And sometimes it could be stuff that happened a week ago, or it could be something that happened 10 years ago, or when you were a baby and can barely remember. It's like all those things, all those experiences affect us. And I mean, in the case of Sir Gawain, it's like, yeah, he has a constant reminder, a very visible reminder that he will never forget, oh, I need to, this is where I failed. This is where I didn't live up to the standard that was given to me and the standard that I accepted. Because becoming a knight, it's like, oh, you accept that code of conduct, those rules, and for you to disobey them, it's like, oh, I went against who I said I would be. And I think that's something even as Christians for us to look at. When we become a Christian, we need to know, okay, what is the guidebook? What's the code of conduct that Christ has given us? And we need to live that out. And every time, in every place where we fail, it's like, oh, I went against my word to live this out. And I think for a lot of us, like, yeah, that honor needs to be restored. We need to think about those things of how we live and why we make the choices that we make. And I think a lot of it goes back to, it's like, well, are we people of our word? For Sir Gawain, it's like, oh, he said, I'm a knight, I'm going to act this way. Yet presented opportunities, he chose a different path. And so for him, it's like, oh, I'm not a man of my word. Like, he's actually, now he's a coward because he went against what he said he would do, and it was a cowardly action. Even though it's like, to be fair, in that position, I'd probably flinch too. I mean, you think about it, it's like, hey, stand still. I'm going to swing this giant sword or this giant axe at you, and you can't move. You can't try to get out of the way. Just take it. It's like, I think I'm going to move. Regardless, though, he said he wouldn't. He said, yes, I will do this. And he didn't. And it was because he was feeling fear, and he let that fear guide him in a decision, and it resulted in him acting cowardly. You know, and it's tough, you know, when you think about... I want to go on a slight tangent here with the idea of like us making decisions and what that, where our decisions are based out of and how that can guide us, I guess, in some ways. So opening up my world a little bit to you guys more, and for long-time listeners, I'm sure some of this probably isn't unfamiliar to you. But maybe some of it is, actually. I lied. Some of it probably not. But I tend to be a very, and I hate this word, but I tend to be a busy person. It's funny because there are times and seasons where I start to relinquish responsibility of like, yeah, you know what? I've got too much on my plate right now, and it's burning me out. And so let me give some of this back. Let me get rid of some of this to unburden myself. And I feel great. But then what happens is I start to get bored. Like, I need stuff to do. So then I start accepting more responsibility, creating the same cycle over and over. And it's like, oh. But there is a balance with it. And there's a lot of things that there are things that are just unavoidable, especially when we look at building up our life and things we want to accomplish. It takes a lot of sacrifice, and it takes a lot of time, and a lot of decisions, a lot of decision making, which can get tiring. And so, I've got my day job, my full time job there, and that allows me to pay my bills and support, fill in the gaps of things that, for like equipment or you know whatever it might be for now. As we're building this up and getting it to a place that could potentially lead to something more full time, which would be great. I would love that. And as a part of that, I think I mentioned on the Christmas episode. Actually, we talked about it on the Christmas episode. Two other podcasts that I'm involved in that are going to be start to be released soon, which I'm very excited for. But it is a lot of time, and those are two different things. And one of them, I'm more in a behind the scenes role of facilitating and in making it happen. And on the other one, I'm co-hosting that, and I'm. They've been great. I loved everything. I love this podcast. I love being able to do this and explore these ideas, have these conversations with such interesting people. But it's kind of exhausting on top of a full-time job, on top of other responsibilities, whether that's at church or that's with my seeing my friends, my family, you know, trying to just enjoy the place that I live. It's like, yeah, it's a lot of stuff. And so decision fatigue is something that I can face quite often. And I don't like that because I like to be able to make good decisions. But for those of you who don't know, it's like we have a certain level, and it's different for everybody, of decisions that we're able to make throughout the day. And the more decisions we make, the harder it is to make informed decisions down the road. And that can often lead us to making poor decisions. We start saying yes to things we don't want to actually say yes to. And it's because we're too tired to make, for our brain to be like, all right, let me weigh this against everything and make the disciplined, right, best decision. It's like, just sure. Yeah, that's good. That's perfect. It just starts doing that. And so for me, it's like, well, okay, what are the ways in my life that I can make sure I can make the best, as many and the best decisions I can throughout the course of a day? And one of them is sleep. It's so important to get good sleep that if you're not refreshed, it's like, well, you start the next day already at a disadvantage if you're not refreshed for that day. So do ourselves a favor. Let's make sure we're getting quality and consistent good sleep. And the other side of that is during the day, how do I make sure I'm scheduling things well? I have good energy levels throughout the day. And part of that's like, let's make sure we exercise, because that is a great way to build up strength, which helps us to have more stamina throughout the day and more overall energy. We're healthier. It's like, yeah, you're going to feel better. So eat well. Make sure we're eating well. But so what are those other things that can help us? And that's where I think I really enjoy, and I love taking this stuff. This is, you know him, you love him. Good old Magic Mind. This is the, this one is the productivity elixir. I knew what the word was, but I just wanted to check. So I was like, let me make sure I'm saying that right. Yeah. So I love this because, yeah, you know, things can get stressful. Life can get stressful. And what's great with this is, one, it's like it helps maintain, for me, that very consistent energy level. It doesn't just like block out the fact that I am tired and I neglect my own body, but it helps me actually have good energy throughout the day to make good decisions, especially when you have so many things to do in a day. It's like, oh, yeah, how do we manage all these things? Huh? This is great. And the other thing I love, especially when we talk about the stress level of it, is this stuff is chock full of really good like herbs and different kinds of mushrooms and like lion's mane and stuff like that that are healthy for you, and they help any like deficiency we have in our nutrients. Like this will help because it's got those things that are good for us. It's like, why do you take a multivitamin? It's like, well, because we might not be eating the foods that give us all of the nutrients and the right amount of them that we need in a day. And when we talk about energy, it's like, well, if we're not doing the things that help promote good energy levels throughout the day, well, we're going to be deficient somewhere potentially. And so this is great because it kind of helps build that in, because it's inside of it. And I love it because when I'm on this regularly, I definitely feel that consistency in my energy, And I find it's easier for me to make more good decisions throughout the day. And then they also have, I don't have it next to me right now, but they have their sleep elixir, a sleep product as well. And what that helps you do is it helps you go to sleep faster and helps you get better sleep. You'll be sleeping like a baby in no time with that stuff. It's great. I totally recommend it. And where did I just put that? Oh, here it is. And so right now it's January. It's a good time for us. It's the end of January, end of February. So it's like, I think this is a good time for us to examine where we're at with our goals and even our health. Like, let's ask the questions. How are we doing overall? And how can we better do that? I think these are great additions because they don't disrupt your life and your lifestyle in the sense of I've got to change everything about my day just to make sure I'm doing this one thing. No, it tags along to your life perfectly in that it's almost no disruption at all. All it does is help. In my experience, it's great. It's awesome. And so to help with that, and I want to help you guys out. What am I? I'm a good guy. What good. I don't know what I'm going with that. But you can use my code. My code here. Check out the description. I'm about to read it off to you as well. And get 45% off the bundle. That's the daytime elixir, the productivity elixir, and the sleeping one. And that is, are you ready? Check this out. Get ready. Get your pen ready. Or just get your fingers ready to start typing. It's magicmind.com/TTOJAN. Let me spell that out for you too, because that's a lot. magicmind.com/ all caps. That's important. Don't forget it. TTOJAN. And if that was too much for you, you better go ahead and just check out that description because it's sitting there. It's waiting for you. And it's just like, you can feel the fingertips tingling, just being like, oh, I should get Magic Mind. Just boop, click on it. Just click. Just do it. It's fun. It's a good time. You'll enjoy it. And yeah. And when you get it, let me know. Let me know how it has improved your life as I enjoy the benefits that I get from it as well. So thank you to Magic Mind for the good stuff and for helping us out, helping us sleep well and product well. Product? Be productive. That's the mead talking. Let's actually have another little bit of mead because my ice is melting and it's going to water it down. It's good. I want you guys to get a handle on this. I've had a lot of mead, different kinds of mead. Actually, one of them, I got it when I was in Georgia. It's cotton mead. It was so the honey, the bees would harvest cotton and that's where they made their honey of. So it shapes, because I think it's really cool how it's like what they pollinate from, the bees pollinate from, has such an effect on the honey. There's a farmer's market that happens here by me every Saturday. And there's one honey place in particular. They've got all these different kinds. They have like a palmetto honey. It's my favorite. It's like got a little smoky flavor. It's delicious. And they let me do a flight. They have these little spoons where I get to taste every honey. It's amazing. It's awesome. But it's crazy how like just the difference of a flower can completely change the flavor of the honey. And so this stuff that they got going on, I like it. It's great. I recommend it. If you're ever in Ireland or you can find yourself with some Bunratty mead, go ahead and grab that. It's good. It'll have a positive experience. You'll have a positive experience, and it'll shape your decisions moving forward. Do you like how I tied that in? It's pretty good. But yeah, so, you know, it's funny. So for me, I don't know if a lot of people notice this or not. If they do, they don't say it. But I have this scar on my arm here. And for me, so I... I was stupid. I was working on a lighting rig, story time with Paul, and I was trying to pop these zip ties that we had so I could move some cables. And I applied a little bit too much downward pressure, not enough away from me pressure, and the zip tie popped as I was pressing down on the knife, and it just went straight into my arm. So I stabbed myself, unfortunately. And me being me, I grabbed some butterfly bandages from the first aid kit, and then I taped it. And I was like, that should do it. And so now I'm left with this scar on my arm. And I actually rather enjoy that it's there now, because that was a specific time in my life. And this, whenever I see it, always reminds me of that time, and what was happening and where my mind was and where I was headed. And it's like, yeah, I think that's a cool thing. And it's one thing where taking our boy Sir Gawain here, or Sir Gawain, I just switch it up whenever I feel like it. He is reminded shamefully of what that blemish on his neck, what that scar represents. And it was similar for me in a lot of ways when I look at this mark on my arm of like, oh, I don't like who I was when this happened. And I didn't like where my life was headed. I wasn't a fan. And so for a long time, it was very shameful for me to see, because it's like, oh, that reminds me of something I don't like about myself. And that's what this knight saw when he sees the scar on his neck. He's like, I don't like that part of me. I don't like that that's who I was in those moments. And I think it's easy for us to fall into that, whether it's something physical or whether it's a person or it's a place or a smell or whatever it is that links these memories. It's easy for us to hang on to these things and to be left in that shame or that grief that it brings. I mean, it's one of those, even we can, I think we go back sometimes. There's people I've talked to that are significantly older than me that carry those weights that from experiences that they had when they were in high school or something like that. And it's like, oh, that's kind of sad. And for me, like, when I think of how long I held on to this, it's like, oh, that's kind of sad, because I wasn't able, it took me a while to heal from that. And some people never do. And I think that's a very sad thing, because we should be able to heal from those things that we've gone through, and become better people from that. I think it's a fallacy for us to just accept that we are perfect the way we are when we know that's not the case. And it doesn't mean and I don't say that in a way to devalue us as human beings or to devalue experience, but it's saying, okay, how do we grow? How do we become better and better? To say it in a very Christian way with a Christian focus is, how do I become more and more like Christ? That's the idea here. And it's that, okay, as I am currently, I'm not happy with, because I make all these decisions that aren't good, whether that's sinful decisions or it's just unhelpful decisions for us. It's like, okay, so what I'm saying is I'm not perfect the way I am is what I'm saying. So how do I help make decisions to get me to a more ideal state? How do I start making consistently better decisions based on the ones that I've made that I don't like? How do I stop making those and I start making good ones? And let's work, let's fight toward that space. So I think what's cool, and I actually won't read this part, but because it's longer here, you don't need me to monologue on this. I'm just reading that. I love, because this whole thing's a monologue. But it's like, okay, so that's what Sir Gawain said he showed everyone and revealed why he has that and what it represents. And what they did was because he's repenting of this. He's saying, hey, this is what I did. I don't like it. I don't like that I did this. It represented everyone poorly. and they comforted him, and then they dressed him up and celebrated everything. And it was like, look what you've overcome. And I think that's a beautiful thing that that we oftentimes hold ourselves back from experiencing, is this idea of, hey, I did wrong, and I'm sorry for that. I don't like that I did that, and so I want to move on from that. And when we don't allow ourselves to open up to those things, we hinder ourselves from healing from those things. So it's like I need to learn how to release those things that I'm hanging on to, especially the ones that bring me shame. And it's like, no. Let's open that up. Let's say, hey, this is something that I experienced, and this is how I'm feeling about it, and I don't like that. Let's change that. Let's heal from that. Let's move on from that, and be better for it. Especially with stuff like this, I always think of the book of Ecclesiastes in the Bible. And I think it's funny because it's viewed so depressingly, I think, by a lot of people. But I actually view it as kind of a beautiful thing in a lot of ways. And it's that idea, he's saying, like, everything in life is vanity. Nothing in the end of it all has any meaning. Like, yeah, you can do that. You can do this. The sinner, the non-sinner. It's like everyone experiences this vanity. So why not live it for God? And I was like, that's actually, it's kind of funny to say it that way, but it's like, it's actually kind of like, oh yeah. If you're saying that no matter what happens in life, if I choose to stay in every Friday, or I choose to go out every Friday, or XYZ, whatever you choose to do, it's like, those things don't actually in themselves mean anything, unless you're living it for God, unless you're living it for a purpose. And I think that's the thing that I find beautiful in this, is like, it's telling us to live with a purpose. And we see this, it's like, oh, he was, Sir Gawain was fulfilling a challenge that was given, and he was repaying a debt in a way of like, he got to strike somebody, now someone gets to strike him. And along the way with those tests and how he responded to those, he's seeing himself fail and not live up to the code of conduct that he said he would. And he starts to live inside of that shame. He starts first by just covering up the fact that it even happened. And I think we can do that oftentimes, is like, no, I'm not hurt. I'm good. And it's like, whoa, what? Why is it so hard for me? I'm being very personal, honest with this. It's like, yeah, why is it so hard to say, no, I messed up. Yeah, I made a mistake. Yeah, I did that. And it's not in a braggy way, because I think that's the toxic side that we can jump to, is like, oh, yeah, talking about it is being like, oh, yeah, I did that. That's me. That's who I am. And it's like, no, don't do that, because that's not good either. Well, you're saying what you did is wrong, but now you're bragging about it. That's not good. you're just finding joy in the fact that you did wrong. And it's like, don't rejoice in that. That's nothing to rejoice in. So instead, we need to be vulnerable, which is tough. It's hard to do. And so it's hard to find the right people to do that with a lot of times. So it's like, yeah, I'm not going to deny the fact that vulnerability is hard. It's difficult to do that. It's difficult to find the right people that you can do that with. But let's not stop from doing it. Because what happens from that is we allow ourselves the opportunity to heal. What did we see when Sir Gawain, when he decided, yes, let me reveal to you what I did? And it gave them the opportunity to say, hey, I forgive you. Now let's move on and let's be better for that. And so now when he looks at that mark, as for me, I brought the example of like the scar on my arm. It's like, yeah, when I see that, when I look back at that, it's like, well, now I can rejoice in the fact that I'm not that person anymore. And I think that's a beautiful thing that we see, especially we see that with in the grand scheme of this. I'm sure you could see this coming a mile away, and I'm happy if you could. And it's that before Christ and after Christ. It's like, yeah, I think a lot of people, especially in testimonies, it's easy for us to look at who we were pre-Christ and be like, man, I was a terrible person. Man, I was the worst. And be grieve that still. Grieve the fact that it's like, oh, I made those decisions and it did this and it had these consequences in my life, or, you know, whatever it might be, big or small. And then there's the other side of that where we can brag in those things like, oh yeah, I was pretty messed up. I've heard those testimonies too. And it's like, that's disgusting. Why are you rejoicing the fact that you were the worst human? It's kind of like people bragging about not getting good sleep. It's like, oh yeah, it's such a common, and I'm guilty of this too, especially when I was younger. You show up to school or something and you see people are like, right. It's like, yeah, I only got like 5 hours of sleep last night. They're like, oh yeah, I only got three. It's like, oh, you guys slept last night? It's like, why are we bragging about this? We're just announcing the fact that we're unhealthy. It's like, that's not something to brag about. And so I think with that, it's like, yeah, let's be vulnerable and let's be open and honest about that. But what does Christ do? What does God do? He redeems that. He redeems us. And he says, like, yes, you've been through those things, but guess what? Now you get to be somewhere else. Now you get to be somebody else. So let's be that other person. It doesn't change the fact that those things happened, because those things still happened. If there are consequences that are long-term, then it's like those consequences will still be there. You can be a different person, but those consequences will still be ongoing. And it doesn't change the fact that you've had growth. It just shows the fact that you've had experience that led you to those places to have those things happening in your life. And that's nothing to feel shame over still, because that, like, shame isn't good. That's not from God. God doesn't shame us. He rebukes us. He shows us truth that leads us to moments where we can be like, oh yeah, I actually did wrong. But what's unhelpful and what's not God is when we stay in our shame in that, and we feel that, because that's not healing. Shame isn't healing. When things are revealed about us that need to change or we need to adjust from, or it's like, oh, in this case, it's like, oh, I was a coward. It's like, okay, well, stop being a coward. I hate saying it that way. I don't mean to say it like that. But it's like, okay, yeah, you acted that way. Sir Gawain, you acted that way. You acted lustfully in that situation. But now you see on the other side of that, you've repented of that, and now you have the opportunity to be better from that. Where if those opportunities, similar things, present themselves again, now, from experience, you can say, I remember what I did last time, and I wasn't happy with that. The decisions I made last time weren't right. So now let me not make those decisions. So in a way, it's like having made those faults in the past can help us not make them in the future. And what shame does is tell us, oh, well, I'm already a terrible person. I'm already the person that does that, so I might as well keep doing that. And it's like, no, don't. That's not healing. That's not helpful. Let's move on. Let's be better. Let's make decisions based on our past, based on our experiences, based on who Christ is, and who Christ has said, no, this is who you are now. This is the code that to which you will live by. And we say, yes, I will do that. Now, let's take our experiences that we've gone through and let's let that inform through Christ our decisions moving forward to being that better person, that better human. Let's heal. Let's get better. Yeah, so that's what I have to say on that. Hopefully this has been helpful. I enjoyed kind of exploring that thought a little bit, and there's still a lot more that could be said from that. But I think that's kind of where I want to end it for now, right here. on that. And it's that charge of, to reiterate that again, is Christ has redeemed us from being that person that we were before. It doesn't change the fact that those are our experiences and we view the world because of those experiences in the ways that we do. But what it should do is help give us a framework and a guide on how to make our decisions moving forward so that way we stop being that person. Let's not forget that, because those things are important. They are a part of our past, but it doesn't define who we are as people, and we shouldn't let it do that. We should always be moving in a trajectory to be more like Christ, and Christ tells us what that looks like. And so let's use the data points that we can get from who we historically have been and pray, ask for help from others, and allow ourselves to repent and to heal so that way we can be better than we were. That's part of the charge that Christ gave us, to be more Christ-like. So let's work on that. Let's make disciples of ourselves and of others. Let's all work on this together, but we can only do that when we allow ourselves to be honest with those around us and open up and be vulnerable. It's difficult, but it's a beautiful thing. And so, yeah, thank you guys so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. And let's not let this be the end of the conversation. Let's continue that conversation. Go ahead and leave me a comment if you're so inclined. Send me a message if you prefer to not be so public with that. And just let me know where you're at with this. What are your thoughts? And how can we find those people if we don't have those people to be vulnerable with? Yeah, that's what I got. So thank you again. Appreciate you guys. If you're not subscribed, go ahead and subscribe. Go ahead and follow. Leave a review or leave a like or a comment. Whatever you're feeling. I greatly appreciate it. I love hearing from you guys and seeing the impact that this has, because I want this to be beneficial and helpful for all of you in how we view Scripture and how we view life and how we navigate those things. Let's navigate this all together. And so I will talk to you hopefully sooner rather than later.